Jim and Jean, their 60th, their diamond wedding anniversary. And during the first part of the morning, I don't know if you remember, if you were here, well, I asked them a couple of questions. One was about any advice that they would pass on or to anyone who was recently married or was about to get married. And the other question came to me after reading about a survey that I'd come across, which I found very interesting. It was a survey taken with 50 people who were all aged 95 or over. Now, Jim and Jean, if they'd have been here, I'd have had to have said to them that they've got some way to go yet to get to 95. But this was a sociological study, and 50 people over the age of 95 were asked one question. And I thought that, you know, today, as we've got a young family, young children, Elijah might listen to this in years to come. Well, it seemed fitting to have some advice from an older generation available to a younger generation. And the question in an open-ended interview with this group of 95-year-olds, they were asked this. They said, if you had your time over again, would you do anything differently? Well, there was quite a multiplicity of answers, but they all more or less centered around three major points. They said this. They said, if we had our time to live over again, we would reflect more, we would risk more, and we would do more things that would live on after we were dead. I mean, there's a lot of answers, but, you know, those were the basic elements that emerged from the study. And they are interesting answers, aren't they? Many said, if we had the time to do things over again, we'd probably take the same route, but we'd pay more attention. We'd pay more attention. We'd reflect more. It's interesting how many people simply don't pay enough attention, or they lose perspective on precious moments. I'll read you a little story from Care for the Family. When Mike was 4, he wanted a sandpit. And his father said, if we put that thing out behind the house, every kid in the neighborhood will be over here. They'll stamp all over the grass. They're going to kill the grass. Mike's mother said, the grass will grow back. And when he was 5, he wanted a jungle gym, monkey bars, playground thing for climbing and sliding with swings that would take his breath away. Mike's father said, if we put that thing in the back garden, every kid in the street will be over here. They'll be running back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. They'll kill the grass. Mike's mother said, the grass will grow back. When he was 7, he wanted a plastic paddling pool. His father said, if we put that thing in the backyard, you know what's going to happen. We won't be able to take out the rubbish without coming back without mud coming up to our neck. There'll be water all over the place, and it'll kill the grass. His wife said, don't worry, dear. The grass will grow back. When he was 12, Mike volunteered his garden for the neighborhood camp. And when they all descended and they started putting up their tents and began drilling spikes into the ground, Mike's father said, they're going to kill the grass. They're going to kill the grass. Why don't I just save myself the trouble, go and put the grass seed straight in the bin? I know, the grass will grow back. The basketball hoop on the side of the garage door drew a bigger crowd that summer than the Olympics. And the bare patch on the lawn underneath the hoop got wider and wider and wider until it took up most of the lawn itself. Just as it looked as though some grass seed was finally going to take root, winter came and sledge runners beat the grass into the ground. And Mike's father said, Lord, I never asked for much in this world, just a few crummy blades of grass. And Mike's mother said, the grass will grow back. Well, the grass this year was beautiful. It rolled out like a green carpet all along the driveway where bicycles once rode, all alongside flower beds where little boys once dug with teaspoons. But Mike's father never saw the grass. Instead, his eyes were lifted beyond the garden, and he said with a slight catch in his voice, "He will come back. He will come back, won't he?" It's so easy to not pay attention to what's important. It's so easy to let things slip away. And, you know, before you know it, the things that you should have reflected on, the things that you should have stopped and looked at and paid attention to with depth can be gone. And these old people said, if we had our time over again, we would have stopped and reflected. We would have stopped and concentrated. So many people don't concentrate. A group of college students were all in a class when one on the very front row was picked on by the teacher. He said, "You, how long have you lived?" Well, he was kind of thrown by that question. The teacher said it again, "How long have you lived?" 19 years, he said. No, said the teacher. "That's how long you've been around since you were born. That's how long your heart has been pumping blood around your body. That's not how long you've lived." He said, "Let me explain." He told them about a time that he was in school and they joined a school trip to go to New York. And they went up the top of the Empire State Building. And he's running around like all the other kids and he's having a great time. And then he realized, "I'm on top of the Empire State Building. I might never get back here again." He goes to the rail and he stood there. He looks over the city. He said, "I lived that moment with such an intensity, such an intensive reflection. I lived that moment with such concentration that if I was to live a million years, that moment would still be part of who I am. I lived it with that kind of intensity." And then he looks back at the student and he says, "How long have you lived?" He says, well, sir, when you put it like that, I don't know, maybe a minute, maybe 2 minutes, I don't know." Often, people said, "My life, when they stopped to think about it, has been the meaningless passage of time between all too few moments when I was genuinely alive." Folks, I'm not saying there aren't times in our day when we have to do the mundane. We still got to put the bins out. We still got to plod. We've got to knuckle down and we've still got to get things done. But you know, even the so-called mundane can take on a very different perspective when you nearly lose it. I was talking to Roger Jones just about that the other day. An appreciation of the everyday things. Don't take them for granted. I'm not saying don't have downtime or rest or relax, but ask God by His Spirit to show you if you're wasting any time. All too few moments when I was genuinely alive. And these old people said that they'd often let time slip away without really paying attention to what is of ultimate importance. People often ask me, they say, "What's the point of becoming a Christian? What's all this stuff about anyway? Going to heaven when you die? A ticket to heaven? Is that what it's about?" I usually say no. It's about this. It's about surrendering and allowing the Spirit of God to flow into you. It's about you and God really linking together. It's about allowing Jesus Christ to connect with you and fill you up. It's about deciding to hold on to Him and commit to letting him lead you in your choices and your desires and your way forward. And they say, well, what's the point of that? It's because when you and Jesus have really connected, look, I'm not just talking about believing in him. A lot of people believe in Jesus. That's not the issue. I'm not talking about that now. It's about this. It's about surrendering to him. That's different. That's different. It's when his spirit is alive in you. Here's what it says in the 8th chapter of Romans. You who used to be dead, you who lived with a lack of awareness, you who used to be dead, he has made alive. Alive. If there wasn't any heaven and there wasn't any hell, I would still surrender to Jesus because of the way in which he gives to me a heightened sense of awareness, how he equips me to see people differently. A teacher in an RE class once said to his students, what do you think Jesus would have said to a prostitute? He got an answer that he didn't expect. One pupil said, Jesus never met any prostitutes. Okay, thinks the teacher, I've got a New Testament here, and I'm not afraid to use it. The teacher said, yeah, he did. The pupil replied, no, he didn't. Then he said, sir, when Jesus looked into the face of a prostitute, do you think he saw a prostitute? Of course, Jesus looked at life differently. There's an old sad song written back at the end of the 1960s. It said, I've looked at life from both sides now. Joni Mitchell. It's life's illusions I recall. I really don't know life at all. What a great line. What a great line. But this needs to be said. When you surrender or resurrender to the presence of Jesus Christ in your life, he makes you alive. Your ability to seize the moment, your ability to have moments to seize is increased, it's heightened, it's absorbed, it's appreciated. John 10, verse 10, I came to give life, life in all its fullness. We would reflect more on life's precious moments. The second thing these older people said they would do if they had their time over again was this. They would risk more. They wouldn't live life recklessly. They wouldn't live life irresponsibly. But these folks said that if they could do more things over again, they would risk more. In 2011, the newspapers reported the story of Naomi, single mother in her early 30s, who was thrown back in time after a rare form of amnesia caused her to forget the past 17 years. She woke up from an apparently normal sleep, believing that she was about to sit her school exams in the summer of 1992. She was, of course, stunned to discover that she was, in fact, a mother with an 11-year-old son living in a council house in a high-rise block of flats in 21st century London. Naomi was told by the doctors that she was suffering from transient global amnesia, a form of memory loss brought on by extreme stress. She said to the newspapers, I'd fallen asleep in a world of endless possibilities, and I'd woken up in a world where I lacked hope. All of a sudden, from believing I was still a bold and brassy 15-year-old, I woke up to something completely different. Now, the contrast between her two worlds wasn't caused by the amnesia, but rather it was highlighted by it. And the sobering truth, but without the twist of Naomi's illness, is that waking up disappointed with life is the story of millions of people, young and old. And a lot of the time we find ourselves immersed in the mundane, preoccupied with getting by, anxious about deadlines, essays to write, trains to catch, and we can race through life but fall asleep on the inside. John 10:10 again, I came to give you life better than you ever dreamed of, is how the Message puts it. I think a lot of the time, instead of asking young people, what do you want to do with your life? What do you want to be? Like, you know, saying status gives you identity. I think a better question, it's only my personal opinion, but I think a better question is, what kind of person do you want to become? Character rather than career. Because character in Jesus, because Jesus is in the business of building character, and character leads to calling, and calling leads to purpose, and purpose leads to contentment. Hey, do you know what? This is an extraordinary fact, right? If you came here today and you go away with just this fact, you'll be glad you came. If a flea is caught, okay, stick with me on this. If a flea is caught and it's put in a jar and the lid is on, the flea will jump over and over and over again and it will hit his head on the jar for several days. However, eventually, the flea will learn to adapt its behavior. When it does, from that moment on, from that point, whenever the flea jumps, it will always jump just short of the height of the top of the jar. And, get this, even more surprisingly, when the lid is removed, the flea will still not jump beyond the height of the lid. It has learned. Its behavior is set. It's created an imaginary lid for itself, which it will never try to break through. It will never try to jump beyond the height of the lid ever again in its lifetime. And even more astonishingly, neither will its offspring. The non-existent lid has become the defining factor in its life, the story that controls its future. Before Roger Bannister ran the world's first sub-4-minute mile in 1954, the conventional wisdom was that human beings were incapable of running at this speed. Bannister had two major attempts at it in 1953, but both of them failed. Now, the popular belief was that the human heart and physique were just not built to take the kind of strain that a sub-4-minute mile would place on them. But on the 6th of May, 1954, at Oxford University's Iffley Road track, watched by some 3,000 spectators, Bannister was about to prove this opinion wrong. Although he ran the fastest race and crossed the line first, no one knew if he'd actually broken the 4-minute barrier. Stadium announcer Norris McWhirter, Guinness Book of Records, finally spoke these words. Ladies and gentlemen, here is the result for event 9, the 1 mile. First, number 41, R.G. Bannister, Amateur Athletics Association. The time was 3, and the roar of the crowd was instant. It drowned out the rest of the announcement. Amazing. 46 days later, on the 21st of June, Bannister's world record was broken by his rival John Landy, an Australian. And within a year, 37 other runners had done it. And within 3 years, 300 athletes had run sub-4-minute miles. It's amazing what can be achieved once the imaginary lid has been lifted. But it takes a risk taker to be the one to lift the lid. And I know what you're thinking. You don't have to be a Christian to be a risk taker. You're right. But risks are an adventure. And even if it was just because you had some common sense, you would go to the one who's got the best adventures planned for you. For I know the plans I have for you, says the Lord. Plans for good, not to harm you, to give you a hope and a future. I have a future plan for you in love, said God. and it's full of hope. God is a giver of visions. Yes, seek some wise counsel. Yes, get some evidence from his word. Yes, use your brain. Yes, pray, 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 and get others to pray too. Yes, depend on me, says God. Yes, stay connected to me. Stay plugged in. Yes, put me first at all times, says God, and I'll lead you. I'll lead you to be a risk taker who trusts, a risk taker with conviction, a risk taker who can step out in faith and reaches the potential I gave you, says God, when you first began. Don't be conformed to the patterns of this world, says the Apostle Paul, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Romans 12, verse 2. J.B. Phillips puts it like this. Don't let the world around you squeeze you into its mold. Don't sell out to the system. Hey, look, relationships are a risk. There are some who never take a risk because they fear rejection. When we were at Kerry and Alice's wedding a few weeks ago, we said when the big day comes, you know, if you think, ooh, this is a risk, I'm not saying they did, but if they did, remember this. We weren't at a marriage that day. We were at a wedding. And the wedding simply creates the opportunity for a marriage. And I know that what I'm about to say now needs many, 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 many layers of sensitivity. And I want to ask you to please forgive me for any clumsiness now, which is not intentional. But I think some marriages break up. Not because one person was bored with the other person. I think they struggle because one person got bored with themselves. They hated themselves. They projected that hate onto other people. They're dead inside. But a risk-taking adventure in God doesn't sound like someone who's going to get bored. They sound like someone who is fully alive, not stuck in some kind of rut. I believe each one of us is called to live out a vision. And you don't need to do something spectacular, do you? You don't have to do something spectacular. Mother Teresa said, we can't all do great things, but we all can do small things with great love. Small things with great love. I believe we're each given the opportunity to live out the vision that God has for our lives. Back in January, Susie and I took the team from Mina Don off to a national conference, and we were meeting up with other folks that do similar work. And my wife is one of the organizers of this conference, so we knew it was going to be good. And, well, the worship leader was a bit iffy, but there you are. I can't have everything, I suppose. The teaching is always good at these conferences. Fantastic. The speaker at this January conference was Gavin Calvert. And he works for the EA now, son of Clive Calvert. Brilliant speaker. And he spoke on the passage in Philippians about a guy named Epaphroditus, who it says in chapter 2, verse 30, risked his life for the work of Christ. He risked his life for the work of Christ. And what we learned about that particular verse was we learned about the Greek word that was used in this instance for the phrase risked his life. And it was the word parabolomai. Now, interestingly, parabolomai, when used elsewhere, is a gambling term. Now, none of you folks will know the rules of poker because you're all very holy. But it's said that when you have a good hand in a game like poker, you go all in with that hand. That's the idea. You put everything in. This hand is so good, I'm putting all my stuff in the middle, and I'm gambling everything on this hand. Parable Omai. That's what parable Omai means. It means to go all in. I'm giving everything for this. To parable Omai yourself for Jesus is to risk everything you have on the worthiness of Jesus. It's saying, Lord Jesus, you are everything. Therefore, I give you everything. C.S. Lewis says that for you to give anything back to God, it's like a child going to their dad and asking for money to buy their dad a present. You're simply giving back to God what's his already. So this whole concept of parable Omai, it inspired this group of guys to form a group called the Parable Army. And through their work, they brought about revival to a place called Carthage in North Africa, 242 AD. And they did this because they were so convinced of what Jesus had done for them that they risked all they were for the goodness of God. They went into places where there was disease and danger, and they went to help and heal in the name of Jesus. They went where others would not go. They would boldly go where no one had been before. Who are the postmodern parable army? I can't help think that this is whom we are called to be. Reflect more, risk more, and lastly, looking back on their lives lived under their own steam, they're not following necessarily or committed to Jesus. Our group of 95-year-olds said they would also have done more things that would live on after they were gone. They would invest their lives in other people's lives. They wouldn't live for themselves. Alfred Nobel, founder of the Nobel Foundation, that awards, amongst other things, the famous Nobel Peace Prize, was born on the 21st of October 1833 in Stockholm. His father was an engineer and an inventor. In 1864, when Alfred was 29, his younger brother, Emil, and four other people were killed in a nitroglycerine explosion at his family's Swedish factory. Now, he was dramatically affected by this. And Nobel, he'd studied chemical engineering. He set out to develop a safer explosive. And this he patented in 1867 under the name of dynamite. Now, dynamite established Alfred's fame. And soon it was being used to blast tunnels, cut canals, build railways and roads all over the world. In fact, Nobel went on to invent a number of other explosives as well. And he built up this multi-million dollar fortune for himself. 20 years later, in 1888, another extraordinary event was to shape Alfred's legacy. He was astonished to wake up one morning to find in the papers his own obituary. And what had happened was this. One of his other brothers, Ludwig, had died. And a French newspaper mistakenly wrote the obituary thinking it was Alfred who was dead. The headline was, "The Merchant of Death is Dead." And you see, it went on to condemn Alfred for his invention of dynamite, which had sadly by then started to be used by the military, by armies all over the world in warfare. Alfred was so horrified by this depiction of his life's work and how he was going to be remembered that he stopped to reflect on what his life was about. And when he died in 1896, his relatives were somewhat horrified themselves when they discovered that after what had happened with the mistaken obituary, Alfred had changed his will. His will now said that 95% of his vast fortune worth around $250 million, should be used to create the Nobel Foundation, which would establish annual awards for those who, during the preceding year, had produced the things that were of greatest benefit to mankind. The prizes and funding rewards were given for physics and chemistry and medicine and literature, and of course, and most famous of all, for working towards peace. I guess that unlike Alfred Nobel, we are unlikely to have the opportunity to read our own obituaries, but our lives author the story that we will be remembered for. Day by day, year by year, we write our own legacy, line by line. Ladies and gentlemen, Jesus Christ wants to take hold of your life, the here and now, and give you not only life after death, not just that, but by his grace and by his sacrifice and by his spirit, he wants, with your permission, to breathe a life into you that allows you, in his strength, not by our own striving, but in his strength, to seize the moment, to step out more, and to invest in others in such a way that you will have a legacy that will never die. He is the architect of lives like this. He is the provider of lives like this. Not easy lives. There's a cost to following him. It is hard at times. There's a cross to bear. But he is the enabler of lives like this. Do you know him? Jesus Christ calls men and women, boys and girls, to redefine themselves, to come up with a real sense of purpose and direction for their lives. God says, the first chapter of 1 Corinthians says, that God takes those who wouldn't even choose themselves and uses them to build his kingdom. Right? It's never too late to be God's child again. To finish, there are two very famous stories about Charles Blondin, the great tightrope walker, the greatest tightrope walker in history. There's one story about his mother getting in a wheelbarrow. I'm not going to tell you that story. I'm going to tell you a different one. Blondin, as he always did, strung up a tightrope across the Niagara Falls. The great Niagara Falls. And from the U.S. side to the Canadian side, he inches his way across the falls. When he gets to the Canadian side, 10,000 people start chanting his name, Blondin, Blondin, quietens the crowd. He said, I'm going back across the tightrope, and I want to do it with someone on my shoulders. Does anyone believe that I can do that? He shouted again, do you believe in me? The crowd yells, we believe, we believe. He says, which one of you will be that person? 10,000 people said, we believe. But only one man stepped forward. Only one really believed. For belief is not just an intellectual thing with a head. It's a commitment of life. The man's name was Harry Colcord. He was Blondin's business manager. And Harry Colcord climbs on Blondin's shoulders, and they get halfway across to the American side of the falls, and the wind starts to blow really hard. And one of the guide wires in the middle holding the tightrope straight, it comes off, it comes away. And they begin to sway very dangerously. Harry Colcord, reporting on this later, said, as the wind began to blow, Blondin yells up at me, Harry! Harry! You are no longer just Harry. You are Blondin. You are an extension of me. When I move, you move. Don't fight me, Harry. Don't fight me. If I sway, you sway. If I move this way, you move this way. If you don't yield to me, you'll go down and I'll go down with you. Paul said in Galatians 2, I have been crucified with Christ, and I no longer live, but Christ lives in me. The life I live now, I live in the body. I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself to me. Folks, Jesus wants to make you an extension of himself in the world. He wants to live out his love through you in the world. He wants to do great things through you, to give you a life lived to the full. Will you let him? Will you ask him into your life today? Amen.